You're listening to Lady Radio, broadcasting live from the unceded territory of the Musqueam peoples. Lady Radio is sponsored by UBC Women's Center. I'm Callie, and we're here with Elizabeth, Katie, Claire, and Tintin. Today, we're going to continue our talk about the body. Last week, we focused on body image, and today, we're going to be talking about women's bodies and legislation and birth control. So we'll be featuring an interview with Allison Brewer, founder and longtime director of the Morgan Teller Clinic in Fredericton, New Brunswick, followed by a good chat about birth control and discussion. So before that, we're going to start you off with Perpetual Surrender by Diana, a Canadian artist on CITR 101.9.
Choose the 100 greatest works of journalism in the United States in the 20th century. Number 16 on the list was I.F. Stone's Weekly. If we survive this century, I have no doubt that Democracy Now! Will be near the top of the list for the 21st century. And that's why tonight we officially induct Amy Goodman into the I.F. Stone Parliament. Congratulations to the world well traveled.
Saskatoon singer-songwriter Jen Lane has just released her new album, This Life of Mine, and you're invited to help celebrate. It's been hard moving on. Produced by Vancouver's own, the critically acclaimed John MacArthur Ellis, the new record is a testament to songcraft and the power of music. Spend an evening with Jen Lane on Friday, April 8th at 8 p.m. at Café du Soleil on Commercial Drive, and get a copy of This Life of Mine to take home with you. For advance tickets or to order the album, head on over to jenlane.com.
Three women, dressed in lingerie, were hanging from the ceiling on meat hooks. In an adjacent room, a man was in bed with two deceased females, also wearing lingerie. He positioned their arms in a sexy embrace. Down the hall, a man holding a chainsaw stood over the motionless body of a sixth woman, lying on a table covered in plastic. These are scenes from a popular music video by a Grammy Award-winning artist. If we want violence against women to stop, shouldn't we stop treating it like entertainment? Join the conversation at #NotOkay.
Welcome back to Lady Radio. That was Perpetual Surrender by Diana. And now we're going to turn it over to Katie McIntosh, who talked with Allison Brewer about abortion in Canada. So, Katie, why is this story important to you?
Well, Kelly, obviously, reproductive rights and abortion access in general are very important to me. But personally, this story... in particular in New Brunswick, just exists at the crux of a lot of interesting issues, I think, including cultural issues of the province and political climate and, media and just all sorts of interesting issues are kind of centered around this. And I was born in the province, but I wasn't raised there. So, it's just kind of, I've never felt fully at home there. I think that a lot of people don't know about New Brunswick, and people don't really think about it. And I think that there's some really important, things that are kind of maybe even going backwards. So I just wanted to investigate for myself, for my own knowledge, and also just share it with other people so that people know what's going on, because it's a really important issue. So, to introduce this, I am going to very briefly try and summarize the history of abortion access in Canada. So, in 1969, the Criminal Code was amended to legalize abortions when the health of the woman was in danger or medically necessary, as determined by a three-doctor hospital committee. Obviously, a big problem with that is that medical necessity is pretty vague and subjective and still posed significant barriers to accessing abortion. So eventually, in 1988, the complete decriminalization of abortion in Canada came into effect with a Supreme Court ruling because they found that the lack of access violated the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So a big push in decriminalizing abortion came from Dr. Henry Morgenthaler's publicly stated defiance of the three-doctor hospital committee ruling, which I think that he performed abortions from 1973 to until it was changed. And he was actually sentenced to 18 months in prison for performing these abortions and ultimately served a total of 10 months. So with impetus from his public defiance of this ruling, this really changed the legislation, and eventually this was changed. So his struggle also spurred the creation of CAROL, the Canadian Association for the Repeal of the Abortion Law, and in 1983... Dr. Morgenthaler began opening clinics across the country. So in 1994, Dr. Morgenthaler opened a clinic in New Brunswick. He asked Allison Brewer, a well-known local activist for women's rights, gay and lesbian rights, and rights for people with different abilities, who also happens to be my badass aunt, and he asked her to start up and run the clinic. And she went on to lead the clinic run the clinic from 1994 to 1999. So here's my chat with Allison about that time.
So when did the clinic open? Actually, I guess is my first question.
I'm going to start with a hard question. I think it was 92. I was involved with it before it opened, so it's always kind of fuzzy, you know, about when it actually opened, because Dr. Morgenthaler had there was a company, and it had bought this house through a real estate agent in Fredericton, and the house was at 88 Ferry Avenue, which had been a very well-known restaurant. And as soon as the real estate agent closed the deal, she phoned one of the local radio stations, CIHI, and told them that Dr. Morgenthaler had bought the house.
Oh.
So they were trying to, you know, keep it quiet for a number of really good reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so then a whole lot of things just started happening. And they called me from Montreal and asked if I would be there contacting Fredericton.
Mm-hmm.
So I agreed to do that, and I did, you know, some media interviews and, you know, just kind of things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took on management of the house, which was, you know, it was kind of abandoned, you know, it's kind of sitting over there. And I rented to someone, so, you know, someone moved in, so little people, you know, there was kind of someone in the house. And just kind of took care of it. They were waiting to open. There was legislation coming down in Nova Scotia at the time around abortion access. And so they were waiting for the results of that legislation before they could go ahead and, prepare to open the clinic. So there were good results out of Nova Scotia, and I don't remember all the intricacies of it now, but they started renovation on the clinic, and the following spring we were able to open.
Mm-hmm.
While the legislation had passed in Nova Scotia, and that was not around abortion. It was around a clinic, like having a freestanding clinic. So the clinic had been operating in Nova Scotia, and then the province was challenging it, but they lost that challenge. It hadn't been challenged in New Brunswick, but Dr. Morgenthaler was going to challenge it. But you need an action, like something had to happen. And at the time, Frank McKenna was the premier, and he said, if Henry Morgenthaler tries to open an abortion clinic in this province, I will give him the fight of his life.
Mm.
And we all laughed,
mm-hmm.
because at that point, Dr. Morgenthaler had been through quite a bit, you know,
right.
The Holocaust and losing all of his family and imprisonment in Montreal. And, you know, like, it's all kinds of things. Like, you're right.
Right.
So the day the clinic opened, Dr. Morgenthaler did... I think five people scheduled that day, and it was really neat. It was really exciting. There were a lot of people there, and people from the Halifax Clinic had you know, come to join us and all of that, and I, you know, just kind of to help out with things, because I forgot to tell you about the part where Dr. Morgenthaler phoned and asked if I would manage the clinic.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I'm just managing the house, but would I set up and run the clinic? And I said, really nice offer, but no. I had no background in running, you know, like operating a medical facility or clinic or really
mm-hmm.
anything like that. So I said categorically no. So the third time he called, I said, Henry, why? Why do you want me to run the clinic? I have no background. And he said, it's because of your passion. I thought, oh. Damn.
Yeah.
He got me. And I couldn't say no.
Mm-hmm.
So that was how it turned out that I was there on opening day with the people from Halifax and Toronto who had come in to help us get this thing going.
Right. Right. So he asked you to manage the house, but was that because you managed properties, or was it because of other, like, activism?
I was vice president of Corral at the time, the Canadian Abortion Rights Action League.
Okay. Right. So it wasn't like you're in Fredericton managing properties. It was.
Yeah, it was more. It was a more political. No, I guess I wasn't vice president then. I was involved with Corral, but I was on the board, the national board of LEAF, the Women's Legal Education and Action Fund at that time. And it was later that I got more involved with Corral at the board level.
Yeah.
So what they were looking for was, you know, an activist and, you know, someone that that they figured could do the job. And it just kind of turned out that, you know, I had properties in Fredericton and I knew a little bit about property management. So I was happy enough to do that.
Yeah.
But then, taking that next step forward into actually running a clinic was a little bit more daunting.
Yeah. So do you think that in New Brunswick there's what is the attitude around?
Why is it they're so behind the rest of the country?
Okay, well, I'm trying to say maybe
to abortion.
Yeah,
because remember we were laughing at Frank McKenna, then Premier of New Brunswick. It turns out that that Frank McKenna put. He put a regulation in place. I think it was like Regulation 54, C-54, I don't know, something. Anyway, it's a regulation in place that said that no freestanding clinic, abortion clinic in New Brunswick could be funded. So if you wanted your abortion funded, you had to go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so the clinic has never received any funding. If you go to the clinic, if you went to the clinic, even still, I think, I'm not sure what the status of the clinic is right now, but you had to pay out of your own pocket, whereas if you went to the hospital, it would be paid for by Medicare. The catch-22, of course, being that there was hardly any access through the provincial hospitals, and we were, once we got up and running, we were providing three-quarters of the procedures done in New Brunswick.
Wow.
And those, none of those people were funded. So Frank McKenna put this regulation in place. And seriously, the finest legal minds in the country worked for years to get that regulation overturned. And they couldn't do it. And I was thinking about it a couple of years ago when they were closing the clinic and, because funding has always been an issue. I guess Dr. Morgenthaler died, and so then funding became a bigger issue. Yeah. And I thought, you know what? He did. He did it. He gave Dr. Morgenthaler the fight of his life. Like it was, you know, Dr. Morgenthaler threw all kinds of money at, you know, lawyers and people, you know, feminist lawyers throughout the country who were working on it, and people at the law school in Fredericton and everywhere. And they couldn't dislodge that regulation. So anyway, I just thought that was really interesting that that Frank McKenna won, and what he won in all of that was the right to squash abortion rights in New Brunswick, make abortion inaccessible to women, drive people out of the province to try and get abortions, and to practically shut down one of the finest abortion facilities in the country. So, but it was still a really interesting legal conundrum. And another thing that's really interesting is Prince Edward Island, there have been no abortions done on the island, like ever. Like, I don't know, maybe since 1960.
Right, like medically supervised.
Long time, anyway. And Prince Edward Island recently elected a man named Wade McLaughlin as premier. And Wade used to be dean of the law school and in the
Thank you. I could make you a tie. If I were a baker, I might bake those things you like. And I wouldn't mind taking my time. If I were your paper, you could read me like a book. And if I was your pen, then you could hold me in your hand. And I wouldn't mind you taking your time drawing the straight line. Fall right next to you. If I were your wood stove, I could keep you warm at night. Yeah, if I were the fire, I could keep you warm all night. And I wouldn't mind taking my time.
Sorry about that. The tail end of the interview got cut off, so we're just going to hop right back to it. Thanks.
Like the mid-90s, like that. And we were great friends. We spent a ton of time together. And he was, as I say, he was elected recently as premier of Prince Edward Island, and they're going to start performing abortions on the island soon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's Wade. That's what a progressive premier can do. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, New Brunswick has never had a progressive premier. I know this new government, the Liberals under Brian Gallant, they've eased things up and they're offering more access. And so it's somewhat better, but they're still not there in New Brunswick.
Yeah. So it was never funded then, the Morgenthaler Clinic wasn't?
No, never funded. Morgenthaler was adamant that women would have access. And the challenge he put to every single province when he went in was, if you set up a clinic, I won't. And clinics are more, if you ever hear that it's safer to have an abortion at a clinic, there's a reason for that. And it's true. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that if you go to a hospital, I don't know, it's still the case, it used to be, they put you under general anesthetic, which isn't totally useless. Like, you don't, you know, it's, you don't need to be under general anesthetic, and general anesthetic can cause all kinds of problems. So, it's a local at the clinics, and it's much, much safer, and there's, a whole lot less chance for things to go wrong. Recovery's faster, you know, it's kind of all of that stuff. That was his idea, was if the provinces, any province that would set up a clinic, he would leave. And that's what happened here in Nova Scotia. They eventually set up a clinic that was part of the, it was a unit of the maternity hospital. Mm-hmm. And they shut down, same in St. John's. They shut it down, but they'd never shut it down. And Dr. Morgenthaler had never shut it down because the province wouldn't give in.
What is it, do you think, about New Brunswick that, like, why don't they have a progressive premier?
I don't know. There's a real, small C conservative streak that runs through the province. It's, you know, it's largely rural. You know, I mean, the province is what, mm-hmm. it's like 375,000 people. You know, it's just, it doesn't have a population base. It doesn't have a lot of progressive thinkers in the general population.
Mm-hmm.
So there hasn't, and none of the political parties have, there's been no political will to move forward on that and risk not getting elected.
Right.
We also have the Irvings, and the Irvings are anti-choice, and the Irvings pretty much run the province. So if they say, okay, this might be a bit of a leap. This might be one of those things where I'm talking to the media and I'm making a statement that's possibly not true.
Mm-hmm, that's fine.
word on the street has been for years that you can't get elected as premier in New Brunswick without the blessing of the Irvings. So that comes with a number of strings attached, and I expect that was one of the strings. So, like, I think Gallant's fine. Like, you know, he's a young guy. I don't think it really matters to him that much. Whereas Frank McKenna was adamant. Like, mm-hmm. he just got into this cockfight with Henry Morgenthaler. Plus, he's anti-choice. He's got these religious beliefs that he felt should be, his religious beliefs should be imposed on all women in New Brunswick. And not a great way to govern, but it's the way it works in our system.
Yeah, well, there's a whole lot of imposition on women's bodies.
Yes, there are. So something as fundamental as abortion becomes a political issue instead of a health issue. And it's caused all kinds of chaos over the years.
Hey, we're back here in the studio. That was my interview with my aunt, Allison Brewer, who was the founder and longtime director of the Morgenthaler Clinic in Fredericton. Stay tuned. I'm going to talk a little bit more. We're going to have a discussion about birth control options and, we've got a song for you in the meantime, which is
Gabby by the Internet. Gabby by the Internet.
Lately when I look at your eyes, I see in depth trouble, darling, as much as I love to try, I can't help but feel so far from you. Yet I'm in the terminal. This probably looks so typical. I probably should be going home, but you make me wanna stay, and I love your visual, so let's just
This is Femme Concept.
Femme Concept.
Femme Concept.
You are listening to Femme Concept
with your hosts Eleanor
and Erica.
Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. on CITR.
On CITR Radio 101.9. We play 100% FemCon.
100%.
It's a lot of FemCon.
It's a lot of FemCon. And you know what? Stick it to the man.
Saskatoon singer-songwriter Jen Lane has just released her new album, This Life of Mine, and you're invited to help celebrate. It's been hard moving on. Produced by Vancouver's own, the critically acclaimed John MacArthur Ellis, the new record is a testament to songcraft and the power of music. Spend an evening with Jen Lane on Friday, April 8th at 8 p.m. at Café du Soleil on Commercial Drive, and get a copy of This Life of Mine to take home with you. For advance tickets or to order the album, head on over to jenlane.com.
Welcome back. That was Gabby by The Internet featuring Janelle Monáe. And before that, we played Taylor by Julie Doiron. Now we're going to jump into our chat about birth control, led by yours truly. So my dad is a gynecologist, and I have collected a lot of female anecdotal evidence on birth control. And so I just want to go through different types of birth control that you can have and the pros and cons, prices, where you can get it done in Vancouver. So just to preface this whole discussion, I do want to say that birth control doesn't protect against STIs or STDs. So condoms still need to be worn to prevent most of those. That's apparently a larger thing coming out, is that because there's so many awesome new forms of birth control, some people aren't using condoms as much just because they're like, well, I can't get pregnant. Great, let's do this. Anyways, okay, moving on. So my preferred method of birth control is the IUD. You have two kinds of IUDs. Mirena, which emits a low level of progesterone. It lasts for 6 years. It's inserted into your uterus through your cervix, and you can call, make an appointment. They'll do the whole thing in one day. So it's pretty easy to do. The Mirena gets rid of your periods, which is a huge bonus, and obviously prevents birth of children. So that's $400, which is a bit of a pretty penny, but it's worth it to get rid of most of the bodily functions of being a woman. You get to have no period or children. So then you have the copper IUD, which is $60. It lasts 12 years. You do still get your period. Some people have reported heavier periods. I personally have had lighter periods that only last 4 days. So that's my, and I've actually had both of the IUDs. So the next is pills, which I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with. It's prescription based. Implanon is a metal rod that they put in your arm that also admits progestin, which lasts 3 years. Condoms, you know the drill. Just to clarify what I'm about to say, what I'm going to talk about, likability of all of these, everybody's body is different, so any birth control can have a different effect. I'm not the only, my experience or my friend's experience aren't the only way that you can experience these birth controls. That being said, here's my personal experience and anecdotal evidence. I've had both Mirena IUD and the copper. They're both brilliant. I've had no problems with either of them. I ended up switching just to not for any huge reason, but I think it's bringing women into the 21st century. I'm a huge fan. I've converted about 20 of my friends to do it. There is some pain associated when you get it inserted, probably 10 or 15 seconds, but I do it again and again and again. And a lot of my friends have had problems with pills. causing either weight gain or acne or having intense mood swings. I've had my friends have had problems with the Implanon in terms of low libido, mood swings, depression, all of those things. So I highly, highly, highly endorse the IUD for anybody that's listening. Please check it out. And then I'm going to open the floor to the rest of the ladies here. I just want to ask, does anybody have stories they want to share about effectivity of birth control or like stuff that has worked for them, stuff that hasn't worked for them? What do we want to do?
Well, I second your IUD recommendation 100%. Mm-hmm. I have the Mirena IUD.
Sweet.
And I have never been pregnant.
Yes.
So it's effective.
And your periods are gone, hey?
They're pretty much gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get like 1 or 2 days every few months.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I had the period for about a few months, like a light period in the very beginning. And then, yeah, lasts about 5 years. So that's something if you want to do it.
I'm also going to third the IUD thing. Mm-hmm. The thing I think is particularly great about that, and that I hope that some people are listening to this who haven't heard of an IUD before, because I didn't hear about IUDs until I was probably like 20, and it made me so mad that that wasn't something I was told about more, because I never liked using hormonal birth control. Like, it was never a good experience for me. And I got the copper IUD in 2 years ago, and it's like the best choice I ever made. I will say, I know you said that you thought the pain was like, yeah, you know, it's like 15, 20 seconds. I was in excruciating pain for like days, at least 1 or 2 days. I had to go home and just like treat myself like a little baby. But it was so worth it. Like, oh, I cannot espouse this enough to folks out there who are thinking about alternative birth control options. Do it, especially if you don't want to do the hormonal route. I'd really recommend it.
My only experience with birth control was with, like, the pill version. Like, I was on a Less or something. That's the brand. Mm. I really did not like it. I used it initially to, like, regulate my period because it was crazy. And it was, like, chill for a while. But then I got, like, crazy mood swings and stuff. So then I went off of it. But then, like, my period got irregular again. So looking for a new birth control. I can tell that IUD is the popular option.
Do
thanks,
it.
Guys. Thanks. Yeah. So I'll probably try that one out, I think.
The other one thing that I will say about getting an IUD is I got the Mirena and I took it to just my family doctor, or like the regular clinic doctor I was going to see. And she tried to insert it, and she was very nice and lovely, but she could not do it, and she could not do it twice, and it was the most painful thing.
Yeah, please, no.
Yeah, for sure. So then I ended up going to the Willow Clinic.
Yes.
Which nice. Is, please just go there. Like, I was, like, bracing myself, and I was, like, already crying before she even started, and I was, like, so scared. And then I was like, okay, just let me know when you've done it. And then she's like, oh, it's already done. Like, I literally did not notice. So definitely go to the Willow Clinic, because it is.
Yes, that was what I was going to say. Willow Women's Clinic, if you're in Vancouver, I'm pretty sure they do insertions and everything for free, because I only paid $60 for the copper IUD, and mm-hmm. that's all I paid. Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Yeah, if you're a BC resident, then it's. Yes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. But then they're super nice and super respectful. And they, like, when I went, they let me, like, lie down for 20 minutes and, like, offered me some juice afterwards. I was like, wow, this is awesome.
They give you a pad.
Oh, they're so nice.
I'm even an international student, and I'm, like, a temporary resident. I pay for the, obviously, healthcare here, and I was still able to get it for, like, insertion for free. So.
Oh, wicked. That's great.
Yeah. I also wanted to say, in terms of hormones, it should be said that, like, a reason why a lot of people have problems with birth control, I think birth control is overprescribed also, because sometimes people have acne and then they're given, like, a million tons of estrogen that's, like, pumping through your body. And mm-hmm. The Mirena IUD is localized progesterone. So it is, like, when you are taking the pills, the estrogen is, like, put through it's called systemic, like, it's put through your bloodstream, and so that's why it's, like, has a lot more effects a lot of the time. And that's why, people have less problems with the hormones from the Mirena, because it's localized. That being said, I did have a friend who is sensitive to hormones, and she felt very off even just from like the small amount of progesterone from the Mamarina, which is fine. And she has a copy IUD now, and it's completely fine. But, you know, yeah, just keeping that in mind. I don't know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Question for that friend who had hormonal sensitivities, was she able to get the Mirena IUD removed? Like, how easy is that process?
Super easy. I've actually had my Mirena removed before too. It doesn't even hurt, that part. Like, you can, they'll, I've just came in, I was like, I need to get it removed, I want the copper one. They pulled it out, put it in same day, and I just called to like set up the appointment, and you just get it done. And they actually do like a follow-up like a month later, and they say that you have to come in, and they're like, how's it going? You say good or not good, and then they help you out, and they do like a, they also do a pap smear while you're there. And isn't that just incredible? Oh, like,
efficiency.
Yeah,
it's so comprehensive.
Yeah. And they're professionals. Like, this, the woman who did it was absolutely a professional and very, very fast. So I was so excited.
You're not sponsored by them, but heavily endorsed.
Yeah, I hope I'm not. Like, I actually was saying to my dad earlier, I was like, yo, they should definitely cut me at, like, like, yeah, they need to cut me a fat check for how many people I've converted. I'm, like, obsessed with this. Awesome. So does anybody have any other stories of friends or just like general knowledge they want to share? No. Okay, cool. Well, we're going to talk about the upcoming events.
All right. So tomorrow night at the Lost and Found Cafe in Gastown is the storytelling show live. There Will Be Blood. Their second ever live event is celebrating that secret, sacred, and utterly banal experience, the period. The evening will feature baked goods, a raffle, live musics, a cash bar, and of course, stories of the most personal kind. Entry $7 or $10 with a raffle ticket at the door, and proceeds go to support Vancouver Co-op Radio CFRO 100.5 FM. And Monday is at the Rio Feminist Live Reads. A whole bunch of amazing Vancouver actresses will be reading the screenplay to Almost Famous with local band and CITR faves, Frankie as in Stillwater cover band. All proceeds go to Girls Rock Camp Vancouver. Thanks for joining us.
Actually, one second. Sorry. Yeah, just because we are running on a slightly different schedule than we expected. We're just going to take a quick break. We're going to play you a little bit of the Pom Poms. And this is Betty on Lady Radio CITR 101.9.
You'd be coming back again.
Welcome back to Lady Radio on CITR 101.9. That was Betty by Pom Poms. We're going to keep the conversation rolling around birth control and legislation and all of these great and serious things. Callie, you mentioned at the beginning of your little spiel there that... Spiel makes it sound like I didn't love it, because I did.
No, it was self-proclaimed spiel.
Self-proclaimed spiel. That your father is a gynecologist.
Yes.
So I want to ask you about what that's like.
It's been fun. It's actually, I have a funny story. Basically, he's very, like, he's libertarian, so he's very, like, open information for everyone. Like, everybody should know everything all the time. And, like, we're, because he's also, okay, I'm from the States, so it's, like, freedom, America, or whatever. Anyways, so I could ask him anything about anything, and, like, what do I need to do for birth control? Like, he would, like, prescribe me birth control when I wasn't, like, having sex with anyone. Just like he like wrote me, like, it's almost the same thing as like a blank check. Like, he wrote me birth control, and he's like, put the date on it whenever you want to put the date on it, and like turn it in, and that's you. And he did even did it twice. Both times I wasn't like sexually active, so it's like one of those things. I was like, thank you, Dad, thank you. But no, he's not my gynecologist, as I've been asked a lot, but that seems like wildly inappropriate and creepy. So just to clarify, I'm not like a weird family of
Do you find that made it easier for you to have more open conversations, like, about sex with your father? I mean, maybe you weren't like...
No, I think it, like, the conversation strictly stayed pretty much on birth control, and like, I mean, I think I would ask him about periods and stuff like that, or if there's problems with that, I would be like, is this normal? What's going on? And that, which is really lucky, especially when you're growing up. And you're like, I mean, I actually didn't really talk. When I first got my period, I definitely didn't talk to him about it. I was like, Mom, help. Help me. But, you know, with the technical stuff, being like, what's a good plan for this? What's, like, STIs, STDs? My very, like, live-in physician, basically. Which is,
is he a proponent of any specific kind of birth control?
IUD. I was talking to him today specifically for the show, and he said something about, like, he used a war metaphor about something. If you, like, you shoot it once, it's like a missile that you shoot once, and then you don't have to think about it forever, and, like, that's just really efficient and, like, something.
Wow.
Yeah, did not do that right.
The missile of freedom, birth control.
America. Yeah. Freedom America. All the above.
God bless.
God bless America.
Wow. Who did you guys go to when you wanted to get on birth control? Or were you, like, of age? Or?
Oh, my gosh. I just went to my family doctor with my mom.
Aw.
She actually wanted me to go on birth control because of, like, skin problems. And I just thought, good opportunity to not have an awkward situation later.
Yeah.
The first time I went on birth control, I asked my mom for it because, like, of period stuff. And then we went to, like, the family doctor. But then I went off of it, and then I was, like, sexually active, and then I had to go back on it, but then I was like 17, but my family, like, physician was like, that's fine, and just prescribed it to me. It was a little like we're tight, like, you know, Lisa and I are cool, but, like, it's just, yeah, it seemed a bit sketchy.
I remember I came to Canada from the States all by myself, and I was started dating the guy that lived across from me in the dorm. Like, our door was literally across from each other.
Oh, perfect.
Yes, it was perfect and terrible, but basically the point of it was, like, I went to go get the ID myself at this place called Elizabeth Bagshaw Clinic, which no longer exists, but I would endorse their organization. And I remember getting it and being like, I don't need anyone to come with me, and I was trying to be brave, and I fully just, like, cried outside of the clinic afterwards. Aww. Just like a big, like, wow, that was, like, physically and emotionally exhausting. I just was like, bleh! And, like, just like it was just a very good, like, condensed moment of, like, I'm here all by myself, and I'm in Canada, and I don't know what I'm doing.
Callie.
That's such a big moment.
So birth control and womanhood hit pretty hard, like, but I'll never go back.
Oh,
good.
Yeah. I remember, like, specifically being in the car with my stepmom.
Oh.
And she's a real cool lady and not, like, genetically related to me. So somehow that made it easier. So
it's like a fun aunt.
Yes. Yes, like that. And conveniently also a guardian. So
help.
Yeah, that was great.
Help me.
I feel like if I think about it now, I should probably ask my mom about this, but she was probably horrified when I asked, not because I wanted to, like, go on birth control before I was planning to be sexually active, but the fact that I was planning to be sexually active with the person I was planning to be sexually active with. Like, she probably was like, oh my God, okay, but, like, your body, your choice, sure. And I didn't end up, I, like, went on the birth control, but I was, like, so nervous about making sure that it worked that I was like, I need to wait 1 month from when I start taking this before I can, like, have sex for the first time. And by the time that month was out, I realized that was a mistake to make the decision with this specific person, and so did not. And then went off birth control. Yeah, I was a very willful 16-year-old.
Dude, you've got your head on straight, man.
Oh, well, thank God. I'm just – anyway, so that was like – I just imagine now my mom was probably, like, shaking her head in horror, being like, all right, I support you, but, like, please don't do this. So I'm glad I made that choice. I'm just realizing that now, that, like, my whole life could have been so different. Who knows?
Awesome. Well, we are also thinking about talking about abortion. I'm saying birth control so much. If you guys have some stories you want to talk about with that, I was going to say my aunt was alive during the 70s when their abortion was illegal, and she had to have, like, an illegal abortion, and her, like, uterine lining was scarred, and she was not able to have children after that, and she had to adopt, which is lovely and beautiful, but also it makes me realize why it's so important to have legal abortion in our country and mm-hmm. in other countries.
Yeah, the risks are so high for that, and people resort to a lot of things in those situations that are super harmful. So, yeah, it's definitely worth bringing up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know that in the States we have a lot of problems legalizing birth control or having... Planned Parenthood is, like, always under attack. People have been killed that work at Planned Parenthood, that are doctors that work there. And in Canada, I know that you're reimbursed for your abortions. Is that how it goes? I think
I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly what the payment scheme is, but mm-hmm. they are in every province. They're covered, but. Maybe except for PI now, as of, like, a week ago, but yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that there was, like, a lot of, I don't know if riots is the right term, but demonstrations going on.
Protest demonstrations. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it, like, for some provinces, like in Nunavut and, I guess territories, like Nunavut and Northwest Territories, it's, they, like, the government will pay for you to travel to another province, is my understanding. So,
oh, really?
Or pay to, like, they will pay the costs of you to go get it where you need to get it.
Because they don't have the right infrastructure to do it there, or because it isn't legal?
I mean, it's legal in every province for sure.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
But just, like, if they don't have the resources or
proper facilities. Exactly.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm not too clear on the details, but I'm pretty sure it's, like, they either have it for sure or they will cover the cost to send you elsewhere.
That's cool. Well, I think, unfortunately, that might be all the time we have for today. Thank you all for wonderful discussions, as always. Thank you to Allison Brewer for interviewing with us, being interviewed by us. Thank you, Allison.
Being with us
today in spirit and in voice. And everyone here in the studio and to all you listening out there, Lady Radio is sponsored by UBC Women's Center. We'll be back next week talking about visual art and featuring an on-air interview with Jillian Christmas, a local slam poet and the artistic director of the Verses Festival. We'll be closing out with Sappho by Frankie Cosmos. Have a lovely weekend. Stay true.
Mm-hmm.
down the street I see your window and I look up in. Is that even your house? Is that Sappho you're reading? Is it cool when I don't care? Can you feel me in the air? Under the crack in the door, can you tell I have no fall? Too stressed out to do the thing that they won't do. But why should I fight back? I'm just not like that. And I'm sorry if I went a real bad friend. Your face too close to my period. So I look up into your window from the street where I am standing. Is that even your house? And I don't care. Can you feel me in the air? Under the crack in the door, can you tell I have no floor?